Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. And Angie is here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. My son needed a major yard cleanup at his new home. We went straight to the Angie website and found a bunch of local, reliable, and affordable pros to handle the job, and one did pronto. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's ANGI.com, or download the app today. The app and website are free to use.
Hello, and welcome to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. This is the weekend edition where we look at things a little more in-depth and or historical. Today we are going to be looking at the Republican candidates and the Democratic potential replacements for Joe Biden, but for the 2024 election with Victor. And so we hope to have lots of wisdom on that today. Before we do all that, let's go ahead and take a break, and then we'll be right back to talk to Victor about the upcoming elections.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We're back, and I would like to remind everybody that Victor is Martin and Illy Anderson, Senior Fellow in Military History and Classics at the Hoover Institution, and the Wayne and Marcia Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. Victor has a website, victorhanson.com, and everybody can come join us, $5 a month or $50 a year. And he is available on social media on his Twitter account at VD Hanson and on Facebook on his Morning Cup. So please join us there. There's also a group called the Victor Davis Hanson Fan Club. We don't have anything to do with them, but it's a great group of people who find all sorts of things.
Be careful about that phrase. It could be interpreted pejoratively.
The fan club?
It's not a part of the Victor Hanson website, but we have great admiration for their loyalty.
Yeah, sure. Okay. And that is the Victor Davis Hanson Fan Club. So please have a look at their page and join in if you would like to, because they really do find unusual things that Victor has done in the past, especially, but also his recent stuff. All right, Victor.
Yes.
We have a lot on our agenda today. So I guess we should just start. And I thought we'd start on the Republican possible candidates for 2024 nomination. Mm-hmm. And we can start where you'd like. I have a list
of people. It's Donald Trump is trying to adjudicate whether he's going to announce before the midterms or after. The advantage of announcing in late October is you strangle in the crib the candidates that think they're going to raise money if you are popular and you're sort of ahead of the curve. The advantage of after November is that you have a chance to interpret the the results. And while it's going to be a big Republican win, you can take credit. You want to make sure that it's a big Republican win you can take credit for. If it's a close margin, then they might think, well, it's directed at Trump. The main thing there is that we don't know to what degree the January 6th psychodramas have hurt Trump, not among the base or Republicans, but with a group of never Republicans or suburbanites that might or may not return to the Republican fold. And by that, I mean, when you look at a poll that shows in New Hampshire, it's just an isolated poll, Ron DeSantis doing better than Trump, that reflects that group of people who agree with his agenda but feel they're not up to another exhausting Trump presidency. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Biden age problem kind of by osmosis filters into Trump because he would be 79.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be the big issue. And the only person that I can see right now that is going to raise the money and has the media attention and is hated by the right people is Ron DeSantis. And he puts the fear of God into the left because they feel he's Trump without the baggage. And I don't know what's going to happen, but we'll see what these polls show and when Trump announces. If Trump announces he's going to run, I still think there's a pretty good chance that DeSantis is going to run. I think there's a pretty good chance that Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State, CIA Director of First in His Class at West Point, is going to run. I think there's a pretty good chance that Tom Cotton, the senator from Arkansas, very gifted guy, is going to run. And I don't know. I don't think Marco Rubio is going to. I don't think you're going to see a lot of the people in 2016 run.
Yeah.
I could be mistaken. I don't know if Ted Cruz will run. I don't know if Marco Rubio will run.
Can I ask you about
Mitt Romney? I don't think he's going to run, but Cheney may.
Cheney. Wow, I hadn't thought about her.
She's going to lose this seat in Wyoming. And then what does she do? She's going to have a lot of job offers. She's going to be a CNN anchor woman. She's going to be a PR person for Apple or Google. Is she going to go to work for Goldman Sachs? Is she going to be ahead of a never Trump type, Romney type foundation? She's got a lot of alternatives, but she's got politics in her family blood, and she's probably going to try to run as a third party candidate or something like that.
She would have to, because I don't think she would get enough votes among Republicans to do anything in a presidential race, not after the display she's putting on right now.
Well, she had a good model. And as I said earlier, our congressman here in the San Joaquin Valley, David Valdeo, made a grievous error by being one of the 10 to impeach Trump, even though he had voted 85%. And Trump had been very favorable to our area in terms of water and things and visited here. But then when he did it, and he was just wildly castigated for the first 2 or 3 months, and the donor class just severed all ties with him, he went mute. And he would show up at political events, but he was very polite, and he kind of wrote it out. He didn't comment. He just said, that's that, it's over with. He didn't apologize, but he didn't elaborate, or he didn't build on it, right? And so when the primary came, he defeated the two pro-Trump Republican challengers in an open primary. And it looks like, even though I think our district is about plus 6 or 7, maybe it's higher, Democrat, he's got a good chance of winning. So somebody like me, who was very angry with him for doing that and didn't tell anybody that he was going to do that and felt kind of betrayed, is going to vote for him. I'm going to vote for him because he's a good congressperson. He's smart. He's conservative. And compared to the alternative, he's wonderful compared to the alternative.
So Liz Cheney's going to garner votes because...
No, she didn't do any of that. She didn't do any of that.
Compared to the alternative? Yeah.
No. What I meant by that was, I should have been more clear in finishing the comparison. That wasn't the omega for Lynn Cheney. She didn't say, well, I voted for him 93% of the time. I'm a staunch conservative. I just don't like people in my capital. They were desecrating it. And Trump didn't do enough. So I voted to impeach him. It's over with. But on the central conservative issues, it wasn't an insurrection. I mean, they didn't arrest anybody with a weapon in there. There were issues about FBI informants. There were issues about security communications. There was issues about Ashley Babbitt. There was media misreporting. So let's move on. But no, that was her alpha. She saw that as a chance to say that I'm the guardian of the Constitution, and this is an existential crisis, in a way that she hadn't said that about the 120 days of burning or the breakout of Lafayette Park or the torching of the St. John's Episcopal Church or the effort to flood into the White House grounds that sent Trump into the bunker or the burning of a federal courthouse in Port. She hadn't weighed in on all that.
Yeah, I know.
And so that's what she did. She didn't do the Valdeo method. And the result was he is going to be reelected to Congress and she's not.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just wonder that she would even think of running. I just don't see any way she would garner support.
She got elected overwhelmingly. The Cheney name in conservative Wyoming is invaluable.
Yeah.
But she was going to run for Senate against an incumbent. Oh, I think it was 4 years ago. It was wildly inadvisable, and she backed out. There's an ambition there that is confined by the fact that Wyoming has one congressional seat and two senators, and usually the senators in Wyoming are beloved, and they stay there 30 years, and they come from families that are well-known. And so she was more of a Washington fixture, and she grew up in Washington. And so she's going to have to find a political outlet for all of this activism and what her constituency is. Right now, her constituents are the Bulwark readers, the Dispatch readers, the Never Trump 10% of the Republican Party, and wealthy Democrats who find her useful and of some utility temporarily. But when she, weighed in support of Roe versus Wade and all that, she can't completely change her spots.
No, she can't.
So she doesn't have a constituency.
Yeah. Can I ask you then about some of the other ones that I was looking at? What about Mike Pence?
Mike Pence? I've always liked Mike Pence. He was very loyal to Trump. He was workmanlike. He didn't have a lot of charisma, but he did very well in the debate with Kamala Harris. I think he beat her very easily. He tried to go down the line and he was aware of voting irregularities, but at critical point, he was not going to reject the electors.
Yeah.
And I think that was wise that he didn't. And he's not, so he got the full wrath of Trump and he was kind of, not passive, but he didn't reply in kind to Trump's attacks, but he doesn't have a political future because he didn't have a political future before that. He was a governor that was mildly popular, but he was not going anywhere. He was a solid, workmanlike, dependable congressional representative, but he wasn't going to, ascend. And now that he's vice president, obviously we look at vice presidents, or do we? I mean, did we really look at Dick Cheney was not going to be president? And I don't think you could argue that Dan Quayle was going to be president. And so to be president, you have to be young and well-connected and raise money and have a lot of experience. And that was George H.W. Bush at the time that was for Reagan. So I don't see Pence at that stage of his life on the upward ascendance, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be a comparative, but there is going to be somebody that plays the torpedo or the missile run amok Chris Christie role. Remember how Chris Christie destroyed Marco Rubio on the stage where he said, oh, all you do is repeat that again and again? Well, somebody's going to volunteer for a high cabinet post to try to get on the debate stage or in a Twitter war or something with Donald Trump to bring it to, make him melt down.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. So probably not Mike Pence, though.
No,
I think
I don't know.
Maybe Ted Cruz. That was my next guy to ask about.
Ted Cruz has been a beneficiary of a lot of Trump goodwill, and they buried that. I don't think Ted Cruz is going to run this time. He's still young.
Yeah, he is.
We'll see. And he's got he had a tough Senate race, and I think that kind of sobered him.
Yeah.
And that he's got to work a little bit more in the base in Texas. And He's a very good candidate, but I don't think he's going to run, but I may be mistaken.
What about Nikki Haley?
She's very charismatic. She's got executive experience at the federal level. She was a governor. The problem that she has is, whether it's warranted or not, she has a reputation for expediency. In other words, she will criticize Trump when she thinks 51% of the electorate, or the Republican electorate, wants him criticized, and she won't when that's not true. So there's sort of a finger in the wind reputation. I don't know how well it's warranted, but there's going to be women involved in this race, and she's going to be one of them. But I don't know. I think she will appeal to sort of the George W. Bush constituency. You know, that solid Republicans that want a little edge and a little younger, a feisty fighter, but essentially will be corporate protectors and won't be on the MAGA agenda fully.
Yeah. How about Kristi Noem?
Well, she's her only, you know, her only disadvantage is she's from the small South Dakota. So it's kind of the McGovern, you know.
It doesn't bring a lot of votes.
Doesn't have any electoral votes, and then it doesn't have any major media markets. It doesn't have any big cities. And she's very charismatic. She once in a while, she gets in trouble when she gets in the national stage on that transgender issue. But more or less, she's very good. I think she's going to run for vice president. And by that I mean candidates that know they can't win get up on the stage and perform very, very well, and they're very careful not to attack in personal terms the leaders, you know, that are pulling the best. And then for various considerations, electoral or gender or race or whatever it is, then they're considered as vice presidential possibilities. I think that's what she's looking at.
Yeah. You said Tom Cotton, and I hadn't thought of him. What makes you think Tom Cotton might run?
He and Mike Pompeo have the most foreign policy experience. They have distinguished records in the military. They both write well. They speak well. They're very knowledgeable. You put Mike Pompeo in a debate or Tom Cotton, they're going to win. There's nobody that's more knowledgeable. And they're not going to say something stupid. They're very careful in their speech, but they're very conservative, and they don't back down. They're fighters. So they're similar in a lot of ways.
And they're both kind of not very charismatic.
You can make that argument. Tom Cotton, you know, and Mike Pompeo maybe are not as charismatic. So they remind me kind of a Dwight Eisenhower-like character, but they don't have that. I mean, they have a distinguished record, but they're not famous as a savior of Europe as Eisenhower was. So they don't have any countervailing assets of fame. You know what I'm saying? They're not a famous general, or they're not a Trump media star or something like that. They've just done a very good job at everything they've been assigned or they've run for.
Yeah, the fact that they're not media stars or charismatic should actually recommend them to us, but it's very hard to.
I like both of them. I met both of them. I've talked to both of them. I have the highest regard for both of them.
Yeah.
I think they're very good.
Yeah. What do you think about Ron DeSantis? Should we think? Yeah.
I don't know him. I haven't met him. I think I've met him. I don't know if he'd remember, but in a couple of lunches with some House members. Well, I mean, you look at what is he lacking on his resume? He's got the Ivy League schools. He's got the perfect education. He was an athlete. He was in a combat zone. He was in the military. He has executive experience. He was a congressperson. So, and he's young. He's like, what is he, 43?
Yeah.
He has a wife who's very ill, but I think hopefully she's recovering. And the question is, does he do it now and get in a big fight with Trump? Or does he wait until he's in his 50s? He adopted the MAGA agenda. The little problem he has for some politicians is that when he ran against, you'll have to tell me, the man who ended up naked in the room with another man.
I remember him.
Oh, yeah, he's under indictment now. And so anyway, That was a very close race. It's almost impossible to believe now that it was, because that guy is not only a crook, but he was, I don't know what the word would be. I mean, he was using drugs and he was buck naked in a room.
Was that Andrew Gillum?
Yes, that was his name. It was Trump that pushed him over, the Trump endorsement is what I'm getting at. So he has some loyalty, but he's what everybody's talking about. The left cannot stand him because when he looked at his chances, he said, I have a resume that is perfect to be president, and I'm a strong adherent of the Trump agenda. I'm going to be a nationalist populist party. I'm in a multicultural racial state. I have a lot of Hispanic support in Florida. I've changed by my policies Florida from a purple to a red state with the help of arrivals from, you know, California or New York that I don't think are going to go left so much. And, you know, he's Harvard Law School. So in a lot of people's ways of thinking, he's the perfect candidate. All he had to prove, though, was that he was a fighter, that he wasn't a Mitt Romney, John McCain type, that he would fight for that agenda. So he took on the transgendered issue. He took on Disney. He took on the critical race theory. And that was to show people that he is Trumpian in agenda and in character and human and nature, but he's not Trumpian in calling people names. And so that would might get a little larger slice of the electorate. So I think that's the big question is, will he run? And what would he have to do to beat Trump? To what degree would he have to attack Trump? And to what degree would that allow him to, if he were to win, to get the Trump base back out? The left seems to hate him now. They feel that the January 6th has kind of neutered Trump for a while, and they've turned their attention to him because he's getting so much publicity, and he's making Florida run like a clock. Everybody wants to go to the, what they call now the free state of Florida. And so, you know, there's nothing you could find in his record or his anything that he's done wrong. It's perfect. I think a lot of people feel he's not really charismatic. His voice or his dynamism isn't quite up to other famous, you know, to a Bill Clinton or Obama or a Trump. But that's not necessarily, you know, that we've had great presidents that weren't like that. So yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, I think his populist appeal and his discipline and his impeccable, you know, like you say, his past, at least impeccable in the
he's
terms.
Impeccable.
That
I mean, he was.
Yeah, I think those will overcome.
Strong Catholic, and he's family, and he's does everything right, and he's not scared of anybody, and he pushes back.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was going to run, I think, against Marco Rubio in 2016. Which is kind of funny if you look at the fates of the two, that Rubio was the darling of the Never Trump and the regular mainstream Republican. And he was, I thought he was going to be nominated at one point in 2016. But again, Chris Christie kind of had that one moment where quite cruelly he just turned on him and he said that, you know, you're just up here as an automaton with rote talk. And that really hurt him.
Yeah.
And then the media turned that, I have to have a drink of water answer to a State of the Union Obama address into a character flaw.
Yeah.
And they really damaged him. And his wife had all these. So he took a lot of hits. And then he's kind of veered to the right now, and he's in the MAGA camp. So I don't know what his future will be. I've seen him speak. And I mean, I've heard him speak, and I've been at places where he spoke, and he's much better than he was 5 years ago. Much better as he ages. Yeah. So he could be an effective candidate if he runs.
Okay, Victor, let's go ahead and take a break and listen to a few messages and then come right back and look at the Democratic alternatives to Joe Biden.
We turn to 2016.
We'll be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Yes, this is an interesting question. How are they going to replace Joe Biden, as we are predicting they're going to want to do? So I know that I feel like we should just not worry about Kamala Harris, because I just don't think that she's going to be the one they look at. But I could be wrong. What do you think about Kamala? And then we'll go through all the other ones that are possibilities.
Well, I mean, she'd never been in a situation where people got to know her, because Willie Brown had shepherded her, her paramour had shepherded her through city, county attorney, put her on boards. And then she was prepped for the Senate, and she just had campaign speeches. And nobody knew her. They just knew that she had sort of a nice exotic name, that she was diverse, African-American, Indian-American. She had good education. Her parents were PhDs. And so she, for the left, she was just like, you know, another Susan Rice. And they thought she would perform like that. But then once she was out on the campaign trail, she didn't get one delegate. Once people saw her in New Hampshire and, you know, in Iowa, there was nothing there. She was an empty pantsuit. And she really was. She had very limited vocabulary. She's repetitive. She has no ideas. And she's got a terrible temper. Nobody likes to work for her. So she's inert. I would say she's like Dan Quayle, but that's not fair to Dan Quayle. Dan Quayle had admirable quality. She doesn't, yeah. And she's of limited talent and limited ability, and that comes through.
Yeah.
So she has to run because she's young and she's vice president. I don't know where she's going to get the team or the prep, but when you look at her and when she starts talking, she gets off the teleprompter. It's just circular, you know, it just circular. And we're going to address this because it's a very important thing that we're going to address, because it's really important. We address really important thing. And you know, okay. The border is critical. We're going to address the border. We're going to be preemptive, and we're going to look at the border, and we're going to be preemptive, and we're going to really look at that's how she talks.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's leave it there. I'll be surprised if the Democrats do anything with her in the coming 2024. Let's turn then to, how about the Georgia Senator Raphael Warnock, who had humble beginnings and was a pastor as well. Is he a strong candidate?
Yeah. He's a socialist that's in Georgia, and he's there because Donald Trump did not go down to Georgia and campaign. And I mean, he was almost eliminated in the primary, and Purdue almost won, you know, in the primary. So he was not a viable candidate until the election and Trump lost. And then Trump was occupied with challenging the methodology of the voting, and he should have gone down there. And when he did kind of go down there, he gave two messages. One, that if you're a true blue Trump supporter, you can't trust the electorate. I mean, the registrars, because they won't fairly count the votes. And so there were thousands of people who said, well, Trump said I shouldn't vote because it won't matter. And then the continued negative media and Trump's reply back to it turned off the suburban swing female voter that had voted for Trump in 2016. So those two constituencies either voted a Democratic ticket or didn't show up to vote. And that's how he got in. And once a senator gets in, it's very hard to remove him, because they've got huge budgets, they've got staff, they get money, they go around the state and say, you know what, if you want business done, you're going to have to work and donate to me. So that's where he is. Herschel Walker is you know, he's very conservative. He hasn't held office before. He's not nearly as malevolent as Warnock, but he's more genuine and more authentic. And he's got the advantage that he's got one task, Sammy. All he's got to do is say, this guy represents what you don't like Biden has done. This guy is to the left of Biden. You don't like the border? This guy likes the border. You don't like inflation? This guy believes in modern monetary theory stuff. You don't like racial disharmony? This guy promulgates it. You don't like paying $6 a gallon fiber? This guy believes that's necessary. And if he can do that, he'll win. No, they're going to go after his, you know, illegitimate children, or Herschel Walker's this, and or he doesn't speak well, et cetera, et cetera. But you'll see another thing is, it's kind of a phenomenon. The left, when they get into questions of, I have to be very careful, but when there are African-American conservatives, they start to reveal their true colors. They start making fun of the way that people speak, and they feel that a liberal African-American speaks like Warnock or Obama or Eric Holder, and a conservative speaks more of a colloquial patois. And so they make fun of that, and they make fun of, in a weird way, that they're limited. They do that with Clarence Thomas. I think Clarence Thomas has pointed out before that darker-skinned African-Americans tend to be more on the butt end of criticism from wealthy, elite, white liberal. And there's something to that. Yeah. And so we'll see. But there's some other, there's issues involved in that race that will, can't be spoken, but they're going to be there. And a lot of it's going to be left-wing, very wealthy, white elites who are almost going to resort to racial caricatures the way that they do with Clarence Thomas.
Yeah, that's the senatorial race, and so I know Warnock's going to be up against Herschel.
I think you brought it. Yeah, and I don't think he's going to be a serious presidential candidate, because I think he's going to lose.
Yeah. Okay. And how about Gretchen Whitmer, the Michigan governor?
Okay. Yes, he was almost kidnapped by a dark group of crazy militiamen that have all either had their trials thrown out and are going to have to go up on trial, or there were more FBI informants planning her kidnapping than the actual kidnappers. She's going nowhere. She's a mean-spirited person. She's turned off everybody. So let's just skip over her. Yeah. She's not going to be a serious candidate.
All right.
Vice president, anybody would be insane to
even have her as a vice president. Okay. How about the Colorado governor, Jared Polis?
Well, I mean, I think I'm thinking of the right guy. He pushes a lot of the buttons. He's a gay guy, but he's also a nice guy. And he's so they like that he's not a, you know, a typical white male straight candidate. He has a diversity element, is what I'm clumsily trying to say. He has executive
He's also
experience.
Not a typical Democrat.
That's
either.
What we're
He's
told.
He's been part of the Liberty Caucus.
Yeah, I'm very skeptical about that. When you look at the actual record and the positions he holds, he's pretty left. But he's better than most of the other Democratic alternatives. But he's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. Okay. And then next to him is the governor of California, Gavin Newsom.
I just wrote an article about him. We live in the most unfree state in the country. You can't go to San Francisco without walking on needles. You can't drive the 99 between, I don't know, Visalia and Delano without getting a wreck, or the 101, you know, south of Gilroy. It's a decrepit thing. LAX is a nightmare. We haven't built a reservoir in 40 years. We're having brownouts. Stanford University lost power twice, shut down. We're in a drought. He perpetuates the let the dead trees from the drought and beetles just rot naturally, and they have nice fodder for bugs and birds, and then they burn. And we have these terrible fires that release more carbon emissions in a year of cars. And we have one right now threatening Mariposa Grove and Yosemite. It's an annual thing. And the idea that you get a timber company and you would say, you know what, you got to go in there within 2 years and get that valuable Douglas fir stuff, go get it. You can't seem to do that. So I can't think of one thing he's done other
he's
than
got...
say that he was going to give illegal aliens $500 million for COVID relief or $400 for every motorist who makes less than $300,000. I mean, I drive down I-5 near the Monterey Shale, you know, mine, and we're never going to tap that. We probably have a couple billion barrels of oil there. Can't frack it. This state has about the fifth largest oil and natural gas reserves in the country. He's not going to touch that.
Yeah.
We don't have a timber industry. Our agriculture is on the ropes because he insists on allowing water to go out the San Joaquin and Sacramento River systems out to the ocean in wet years, and we don't have anywhere to store, which we could use right now. And so there's nothing redeeming. So, you know, we pay 13.1 in the top brackets in California. We have the highest gas taxes. If you look at the local sales tax add-on, we're about fourth in the country on sales tax. I think we're second in kilowatt prices. We have the highest gas prices. And our property taxes are only because of Prop 13 that was supposedly limited 1%. But when you add on local special exemptions, it can be up to 2%. And you can pay $1,000 a square foot for a home in California. So our property taxes are exorbitant. And then you say, okay, but you live in California, so you get what from it? You get good weather, but now you get wildfires and smoke and high crime and homelessness. And what do you get in schools? We're rated in the bottom 10th of the nation in schools, or 8th grade and high school test scores. Well, you get infrastructure. No, you don't. It's rated about 46th in the nation, 47th in the nation. Will you get safe streets? No, you don't. San Francisco has the highest property per capita crime rate in the United States. So what do you get for all that taxation? Well, what you get is about 8 million people the last 30 years have fled and taken about $25 billion. And so we have no conservative, traditional Republican middle class left. So we have a one-party state that he rules over, with supermajorities in the state Senate and Assembly, with no statewide officer who is a Republican. Maybe Lonnie Chan was running for controller. My colleague at Hoover has a chance. I don't know. I hope he does. And then you have only, I think there's 53 congressional districts, and we only have 11, and that's up from 7 Republican. So you brought in all, you know, $6 trillion worth of capital and all this money along the coast and all these yuppies, suburbanites that are very left-wing, and then the middle-class left, and then we had this huge 40% of the state's Mexican-American, mostly. And that's the big issue, isn't it? Because a lot of them have had it with Gavin Newsom, and they've had it with Joe Biden, and they understand he's destroying their livelihood right before their eyes. They can't afford to drive. They can't afford to buy a 2x4. They can't afford to buy cement. They can't afford to turn on their air conditioning. And they don't want to hear about gay marriage and transgenderism and the New Green Deal and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Abortion in the ninth trimester and all that stuff. I mean, in ninth month, third trimester or partial. They don't want to hear it. They want to hear what he's going to do. So we'll see. But my point is that his record in California is an utter disaster. And then he sounds like a mafioso with that gravelly voice. And then he doesn't know anything. Like when Hillary said that this was a never let a crisis go to race, the COVID lockdown, and he chirped in, well, we're going to have a more progressive capitalism when we come out of that. I think, what is more progressive capital? You're going to pay your property tax on time? Is that what you're going to do like everybody else? That's progressive. Yeah. What does more progressive capitalism mean? That means maybe that, I don't know, that Barbara Boxer doesn't work any longer for China, that Dianne Feinstein's late husband wasn't a big billionaire from Chinese income, or she didn't hire a Chinese spy for her chauffeur. Is that what she means? Or Nancy Pelosi says, I'm going to have a more progressive capitalism. I'm going to do what Diane did when she sold her Lake Tahoe estate. I'm going to sell my Napa estate and just live in my San Francisco estate. Or Jerry Brown can say, you know, I'm going to get rid of 1,000 acres of my Grass Valley property, my 2,500. Or the Obamas will visit. We're going to give up that 2,500 gallons of propane tanks in Martha's Vineyard. That's what I'm getting at. So I don't think we can take him seriously. You know, he's just, you know, he's just, It's a joke. I wrote this column and I ended up saying he's like the guy with a service station that had the Shell or Chevron name, you know, and it was just an automatic clientele. That's what California was. It's so beautiful. It's got this long coast and Yosemite and everything, mountains, sierras, beautiful state, beautiful institutions, beautiful heritage, wonderful governance up to about 1980, and he destroyed it. And so this is a guy with a service station that destroyed it. It's crappy. It's all torn up. His gas is really high. It's bad. It's watered down. And everybody who drives by turns the other way to another service station, the Florida service station. It's clean. It's cheaper. It's got better products. It's well run. And then he gets on top of his service station and says, "Hey, everybody, don't go over there. Come here. It's free. It's a free state. It's a free station." That's what he's doing. I mean, that doesn't work, does it? People vote with their feet. Yeah. And Florida can't handle the number of Californians that are arriving. And he says, "Come to California." No, 1 million have left in the last 2 years. $20 billion in capital have left. They're all going to Austin or, Miami or something. They're not going to Silicon Valley. They're not moving into San Francisco. San Francisco's got a lot of vacant office space.
Yeah.
He's just a product of that
whole milieu. Yeah. I mean, look. Gavin Newsom looks like one of the ones that are at least out front right now. That's what's bothering me. And he did survive a recall where Gray Davis did not survive.
It was very late and was poorly planned. And he had, and Gray Davis was recalled when there was a Republican Party. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There is no Republican Party in California.
But there wasn't as many failures of the state under Gray Davis.
No, and yet he was recalled because he doubled car registration. His car registration would be cheap now. Mm. But people were angry, and it was starting to, these problems that we're talking about were starting to happen. But California will never be saved unless you break up and utterly reject politically, culturally, socially, this nexus between the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, Berkeley and Stanford, $6 trillion in market capitalization, Google, Facebook, Twitter, Uber, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And that produces a one-dimensional, non-diverse. I mean, at one point, you could argue that some of the most powerful people in the United States were House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senior Intelligence Chair on the committee, Dianne Feinstein, and Jerry Brown, and then Gavin Newsom, the mayor, Barbara Boxer, the other senator. They lived about 50 miles from each other, and they all were wealthy. And they were all wealthy white people that were liberal, and they all either inherited a ton of money or married into a ton of money. And we were supposed to be impressed because they mouthed these diversity shibboleths and platitudes. I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I thought these are the most undiverse people in the world. They're not geographically diverse. They're not economically diverse. They're not racially diverse. They're not ideologically diverse. They're part of this little old club in the Bay Area.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you on Gavin Newsom and his failed policies in California should exclude him from the rate, a run for
president. He'll exclude
president.
Himself. He will exclude himself.
But they did get a noxious person in a basement elected to the presidency. So I'm not sure that the Democrats would be, phased. I mean, he looks good visually and everything else. That's okay. They can cover that up, So, we'll see. I agree with you. I wouldn't expect him to be a candidate, but we never know. How about Governor J.B. Pritzker?
You're in Illinois, so it means that you're governor of Chicago, right? Chicago mm-hmm. is a multi-million person hemorrhaging catastrophe, a Lori Lightfoot catastrophe. There was a reason why Barack Obama got three estates and never wants to go back to his community organizing home and his little mansion. He will never go back. It's a dysfunctional city, and it characterizes that whole state. I don't think that anybody who's governor of Illinois is going to go anywhere until as long as that city is there. It's murder capital of the United States. It's dangerous. It was a beautiful city. It was, when I was in college, it was called the can-do city. It was always juxtaposed to New York. They always said Chicago got the snow off the street. The Daily Klan may be corrupt, but it's an efficient, well-run, clean, growing city, unlike New York. That's what people said, or unlike Baltimore or Washington. But now it is at the nadir. And what does he have going for him? He has a hotel fortune. That's it.
Yeah.
And he needs to, he needs to lose a few pounds too, to be frank. And so,
okay. So you have wiped off the list of possible candidates, everybody I could come up with. Did you have any ideas on who might be the Democratic alternative to Biden?
Well,
where are they going to go? Where are they
going? I don't. That's what I think. They're in big trouble because they don't have a governor, or they don't have a senator that has any national prominence. And if you don't believe me, just go back and review and recall the 2016 primary, where we had how many of them? 17 of them out there, 15 of them. You could argue that when Trump won, he defeated people with extraordinary popularity and records. I mean, Scott Walker and Cruz and Rubio. And there were a lot of people there that had been around, Kasich, all. But when you looked at that field, Castro or Spartacus or Elizabeth, it was just turned off the whole Democratic electorate.
Yeah.
And so that's how Joe Biden got president, was that they had nobody except, you know, Joe Biden. And the great thing about him is he had an empty head and they could put things into it and say, carry us across the finish line. That's what he did. So now he did it. And now, if he had have had any courage, he would have picked a articulate, young, fairly unknown person from a large state. Who that would be, I don't know. But he would have groomed them as vice president. They would be all over. They would be going to every funeral. They would be in all over the world right now. That's what good vice presidents do. And they would be honing their rhetorical skills or political savvy, building a team. But that's not going to happen. No. Kamala Harris, is, as I said, she bleeds teams. The teams that she has are bleeding. They're just leaving. Nobody wants to be around her. She can't finish a sentence. She knows nothing. I don't think she'd been to Europe before.
Yeah.
So that's what he did. And maybe he did that. And, you know, as soon as I say that, one of our brilliant people out there listening, and all of you guys are, you're going to say to me, hey, Victor, what the hell's wrong with you? That's the point, idiot Victor. He knew that he was non-compos mentis. He surveyed the landscape. He's looked at this candidate. He knew that she was inarticulate. He knew that she was incompetent. It was the Agnew factor. He deliberately picked someone that he would never be impeached because the alternative was worse than him being insane or unhinged. And that's what he did. That's a viable thesis, you know, that he didn't want anybody that could be president as vice president. So that's what keeps him from being. Believe me, Sammy, right now, if you had a charismatic person like Obama, that was glib. Even Pete Buttigieg, as bad as he's been, if he was right now vice president, they would get rid of Biden. They would find a way. They have ways of doing it. They would get rid of him under the 25th Amendment, or they would put so much pressure on him that he would have an incident or something and resign. But they're not going to do it with her.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Victor, let's go ahead and take our last break here for a few messages and come right back, and we'll talk about the Senate races in 2022 that might be up for play. We'll be right back.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back. And so we've got a few retiring senators, the retiring Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania. I think that's the seat that's probably the most uncertain which way it will go. You have that Dr. Oz on one side and then as the Republican candidate and Fetterman as the Democratic candidate. How do you think that's going to go?
I think Oz is going to win. He was probably the most viable candidate for all of his limitations. And his opponent has got some health issues that he hasn't been candid about. I had been long COVID. I understand if I was running right now and I feel like I do now, I would be hiring, I guess, Hollywood celebrities at $500 to make commercials for me. I think that's what his Fetterman's doing.
Yeah.
So you can't run a campaign when you don't feel well.
Yeah.
And so I think Oz will win that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope you're right on that. You've already talked a little bit about the Georgia senatorial race between Warnock and Herschel Walker. Do you have any prediction on who might win that?
I think Walker will pull it out.
Okay.
Because I think the news cycle is going to get worse from now on. Yeah. When they say gas went, wow, it went down from $5 to $4.80. What does that mean? I mean, that's what they talk about.
Yeah, so, it doesn't mean much to somebody who's making.
So I think that Pennsylvania is very important because it's such a big state and it's important. But you know, when he in the primary, I don't know what it was. Almost 50% of people didn't like Oz. He was kind of they felt that he was slimy. He had kind of complicated relationship with Turkey. And people, and he had, you know, he came from New Jersey and all of that. But now that he's won, he barely won. McCormick really did him a lot of damage in the primary. But I think he will win because I think Fetterman is not going to be a viable candidate.
Yeah. All right. How about North Carolina has a retiring senator as well, Richard Burr. And the races between it appears Ted Budd, who's the Republican, and Sherry Beasley, who's the Democrat. The Ted Budd sounds like he's probably more well known. I'm not sure about that.
You know, I think he's going to win that race. And he's kind of one thing to remember is that the people who are running for the retiring Republicans, if they win, it's going to be a lot more conservative Senate in general and more conservative Republican caucus in particular. You know, Richard Burr, I mean, the way he handled the Senate investigation of collusion was a joke. Anyway, I think that Bud will be, I don't know, I think he'll be a lot more conservative. I think he can win.
Yeah.
I mean, after all, North Carolina is a purple state, but I think he's going to win.
Yeah.
It's going to be very hard for people to run when your president's polling below 30%.
Yeah.
Because what do you do when he comes in your state? You regret you had a scheduling conflict. That's what all you can say because you put him out there and people see him and they think, I don't like that guy. And if I don't like that guy, I don't like the guy next to him. And why are you thinking you're part of that guy? You're part of that happened. Yeah. Remember in George Bush with Iraq, he was one of the most popular presidents, 93% after 9/11. And then when he gave that megaphone, he said, the whole world's going to hear for it. He was up. Just outstanding. And then the first 3 weeks of the Iraq War, when the statue fell, he was in 85%. And then the media went after him, and then the war went south, and the insurrections. And by 2006 midterm, he was polling, 30%, and no one wanted to be with him. And they got wiped out in the House.
Yeah.
And that's going to happen to these people. They can deny it all they want. They write these silly little articles. It's not going to be this bad. They always write that, Republican or Democrat. It's going to be bad.
Okay, how about the Nevada senatorial race between Catherine Cortez Masto and Adam Laxalt?
Adam Laxalt, he's got an illustrious, I guess that was his uncle or great uncle, Paul Laxalt, Reagan's chum. But he's attorney general and he's very, very conservative. And he's a lot more savvy than most candidates. I've talked to him on the phone a couple of times. And I think he's going to, Cortez Masto has, she was a Hispanic candidate. But when you have Hispanics that are turned off at the Democratic Party, I don't know, maybe they can get, like, Harry Reid's not around anymore. So you don't really, I don't know if the SEIU buses still work like they used to. But I have a feeling that he can have an upset win.
Yeah. Okay. Well, those are the.
How about really Arizona? I think.
That's right.
Blake
yeah,
Masters, Peter Thiel's favorite candidate. I think he's going to win. I think he's going to defeat Mark Kelly. He was third. He was like J.D. Vance in Ohio. They were not running well. And because they didn't have a lot of name recognition, or the name recognition they did was clouded, and they just kept, they're both very well spoken, they're very smart people, and they were well funded by Peter Thiel and others. And JD Vance is going to win, I think, in Ohio. I hope he does. And I think Blake Masters is going to beat Mark Kelly.
Yeah,
I think he really is. And I think in Wisconsin, Ron Johnson's going to get reelected. I don't know about Maggie, I said her name, Hassan in New Hampshire.
Yeah,
but
those are all House.
Marco Rubio is going to win. Yeah. Everybody says he's going to lose at this Val Demings, but she's very, very. She'll win the nomination in August, but she'll lose to Marco Rubio. And I think that guy that ran for president, I'm trying to remember his name in Colorado. Is it Bennett? Michael Bennett. Mm-hmm. He's going to lose too. I think he's the third. So I have a feeling that those 8 or 10 races that were toss-ups, that the Republicans have a good chance to take 8 or all of them. I really do.
Yeah.
I don't think the left knows how bad it is. I think they're still, in denial. They don't understand that when you see Joe Biden talking as he does, or Kamala Harris, or you see inflation, or you see the border, you just turn on the TV and you look at that border and people see, they say, why are these 10,000 people just crossing into my country uninvited, breaking my laws, bringing in drugs? Why? Or when they look at, they get to that gas pump. I was in Palo Alto of all places, and a very upscale woman in a Mercedes, it was probably, she looked at me and she said, this is awful, isn't it? And I said, well, I'm from the Fresno area and it's 640. So it's almost the same there, and it's bad everywhere. So people are getting very, very angry. They accept that, they're getting angry now about gas and inflation. And so, and it hasn't peaked yet. So everything in a volatile situation like this, everything is up for grabs. All the convention wisdom is suspect.
Yeah.
You don't know what, everything that's up is down. Everything that's down is up. There's no reference that can be counted on. And that's what Trump won.
From what you said here, it would be 4 senator advantage, actually, but 2 senators, 52 to 48 in the
Senate.
I'm
not worried about them taking the Senate and the House. I'm worried about what they're going to do when they get it.
Yeah.
And how they're going to herd all those people in to focus, concentrate. I don't want it to end up like Benghazi, where they had a legitimate case, they had a good guy like Trey Gowdy, and it turned into the left-wing media eviscerated them, and it didn't work, and Hillary kind of melted down. They had a golden opportunity to find out what was really going on in Benghazi, why we didn't reinforce those embassies, why we didn't get help in there, what was the relationship between Benghazi and the re-election efforts of Obama, and they blew it. And so if they're going to investigate Hunter Biden, January 6th, fully, May 31st, 2020, the corruption, and if they're going to call in Comey and McCabe, they're going to call in all those people, call in and look at the military. They're going to do all of that stuff. They better do it competently and efficiently and not turn it into a circus or not do it at all.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
We'll see. All right, Victor, time is up. Thank you very much for your reflections on the potential Republicans and Democrats for 2024 and the Senate races coming up in 2022. We appreciate once again, as always, all your wisdom, and we thank our listeners for listening.
Well, thank everybody for listening as well.
All right. This is Sammy Wink and Victor Davis Hanson. We're signing off.